You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
It's our Wednesday, February 24th, 2021, Wine Country Live Morning Show. We're happy to welcome in County Supervisor Belia Ramos. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing okay. Been a while since we talked.
It has. Good to be back.
Yeah. Out of all the things going on in the world and here in the county of Napa, what is your top priority these days?
Oh, gosh. I think that's everyone's top priority is the health and safety of our community. And what started nearly a year ago as this pandemic, as we issued our original stay-at-home order on March 20th, you know, we've come a very long way to be able to say that we're in a place where less than 11 months, we were already vaccinating our members of our community. But the impact of weather, of shortages, of logistics, of delivering those vaccines is created this three-part fragmented environment of COVID, which is first and foremost education, right? Education mm-hmm. still remains a top priority for us because that is the first and greatest defense for community mitigation of transmission. Then we have testing, which also still continues. I know you don't hear as much about it, but it's still there and it's a very big push, as well as the one that is of most interest to people right now, vaccinations. So COVID on three different fronts, from, as I always say, the little department that no one really pays attention to until you really need it, like in a pandemic, public health. And what this last year has certainly showed us, last night had the opportunity to participate in the City of American Canyon State of the City. And one of the things that I said is, you know, you don't realize how much you need a county until you need a county. And right now, this is the moment when everyone needs the county, because we are the entity that is charged constitutionally to care for the health and welfare of our residents. And really bringing that into people through education, through the testing, and really through that shot in the arm that so many people are looking forward to receiving, we have really had the opportunity to really come down to our core of what it means to provide for the health and welfare of our residents.
I think Steve Potter, City Manager Steve Potter, who was here yesterday, really, you know, said something off the bat, which was, everyone was so hopeful, and then we weren't able to get as many vaccines as we had hoped. And there was this like overwhelming, he could sense the community being frustrated. And we've seen that. And, you know, we just got another shipment, so maybe we'll get that positivity back up. And
well, not the COVID positivity, the positivity related to the vaccine.
Yeah. Let me clarify that. Yeah. Positive minds.
We want to have a positive attitude about the positivity going down.
Yeah, correct. Right? Absolutely. Correct.
Since we're talking about the vaccine, that we have to touch the elephant in the room question for you, of course. You received the vaccine.
I did.
It got publicized. You took some shots about it. Talk about that issue a few weeks later now.
Certainly. You know, one of the things that is incredibly important during this time is, in fact, how we are managing those vaccines. It's important on two fronts. One, it's important because we know these vaccines are incredibly valuable and short in supply. So we have to be wise with the way in which we are using them. And we have to operate within those parameters that are given to us by public health. Those parameters have changed now. I believe it's 17 times for us that they have changed. That's number one. The second one is that people have to have confidence in how we are administering these vaccines. The day that I was present at the vaccination site, I was doing a PSA, and it was for Spanish speakers as you know, in the Latinx community, there is a lot of fear related to this vaccine, and some of it is religious-based fear. So as a Mexican-American Catholic, Speaking out about the importance of receiving the vaccine is incredibly important. And so certainly I was willing to do that. It was actually supposed to be our chair, Supervisor Pedroza. He had a scheduling conflict, so I came in at the last minute and I did it. And it was towards the end of the clinic, and I had the opportunity to do the video, and I was asked, can you simulate going through the line in your car, how normally someone would do it? So we did it. We didn't get all the rolling tape, so we did it again. And we even simulated where you pull off to the side and you get observed for having received your shot. But I didn't receive a shot in those two run-throughs. At this point, the clinic is closed, and we have this, the county has this list of people that are in vehicles on standby, ready to receive a vaccine in case we miscalculated the number of doses thawed out, because these vaccines, Moderna, Pfizer, need to be thawed out. And they have to be used within a certain amount of time, and that's a short window of time, 2.5 hours. And that day, administering Moderna, there were four people that were waiting in cars. Those four people went forward. I actually had to hold back and not put my car through to do another run-through of this video simulation, because we needed to let those people actually get their vaccines. At the end of the last person receiving their vaccines, there were still vaccines in the last vial left. There were two volunteers at the vaccination center, regular volunteers, that were also administered a shot. And then there was still one more left. Now, I know it's difficult for some people to look at me, see me, and say, well, why her, right? Not at all minimizing the and acknowledging the frustration of people, because I definitely do understand it, and to say that many questions of what I would do in that moment went through my mind. The first one was, I asked, is everyone here vaccinated? And I asked the question twice. That was incredibly important to me. Two, our clinic was already closed. There weren't going to be further people coming in. It was at that moment, it was actually 4:26. And I have a picture that shows the time that I actually got that vaccination. With our clinic closed at 4 o'clock, at 4:26, I was faced with the decision. The decision is either with the knowledge of an available vaccine being there, letting it go in the trash, mm-hmm. or to receive the vaccine. And honestly, I'll say, and I stand by it, CDPH guideline is very clear. Do not let vaccines go to waste. Dr. Fauci has said time and time again, get it when you can and don't let it go to waste. Last week, we saw 292 doses in Santa Clara go to waste because people didn't show up to vaccines and they were thawed out. It is important for all of us to get vaccinated. At the same time, it is important as a community that we acknowledge that every person getting vaccinated is further protection for ourselves.
I was just going to say, you've laid it out super eloquently, and I feel like I personally think that people were very awful to you in the comments that I saw. I mean, my husband received the shot because there were extra doses. He's a first responder, but he wasn't supposed to have gotten it yet, but there were extra. They called the first responders in. In that situation, there's one dose left. Yes, you could go to your list, or you could give it to the person standing there, and then that's one more person vaccinated, like you said. I think that there's a lot of, and what Steve Potter was saying yesterday, the community, there's just people who are upset, and anything is going to rile them up even more. And that I think the county, this is a nationwide issue where there's miscommunication and there's allocation problems. And I'm not blaming the county. The county is doing the best that they can with what they're receiving. And I think everybody just needs to be a little bit more understanding that everyone's doing the best that they can. And I appreciate everything you said, but I think, you're okay.
Like, you know? I'll say this, Taylor. You know, I appreciate that. At the same time, I understand it.
Yeah.
I am a person in the public eye. I am the person that people go to that know to go to express their frustrations, whether it's public comment or whether it's in other avenues. I am not excusing people's behavior that has been cruel and rude. I'm not excusing it, but I acknowledge it. I acknowledge it that it comes from a place of frustration, and I understand that. It is my hope that what we can learn from all of these moments, these collective moments, these challenges that have been posed to all of us through COVID-19, is that what started out as the shaming of someone being COVID positive has now turned into the shaming of receiving a vaccine. We need to really focus on what our goal is. Our goal is community immunity. We are only safe and are able to stop COVID-19 in its tracks when we are at a point of about 75% community immunity. This morning, NPR posted a graphic on their Instagram that showed the spread of COVID-19 with only 5% of the community vaccinated versus 75% of the community vaccinated. And it's a fascinating video graphic that shows why we need people vaccinated. So what I say is, no, you don't need to get vaccinated in your county. When it's available to you, you get it. Now, we have priorities that are of how we're going to vaccinate. This wasn't a line jumping scenario, right? This was a waste management strategy scenario that resulted in me getting a vaccine. I'm incredibly grateful to have that vaccine because I know that I am doing it to protect my community. And at the same time, as a Mexican American Catholic, I am showing other people, yes, it is safe to get this vaccine. And I will continue to do that. You know, it's going to be hard. We're not out of it. It's difficult for people to emotionally sit where we're at in what seems like, you know, when I think back, you know, what is this like? And I think about the Great Depression of people lining up for food. We're technically not. We're physically not lining up, but virtually we're lining up through myturn.ca.gov for these vaccinations. And there's frustration. There's that feeling of hopelessness. But we're turning the corner. And it's we're going to have to sit with this uncomfort for a little bit, but we're really moving the meter on this.
I have a question for you from our KVON community forum page. We posted a couple of notes there. We're going to have you on. And did anybody have questions? Jose is asking, for Belia, now that she has been fortunate enough to get her COVID shot, what specifically can she do to assist others 65 plus or with medical issues get their first shot? Our county, he says, has a poor system of distribution of shots.
One, buenos dias, Jose. And two, so that's an outstanding question because one of the things, public health, again, as I've said, the little department that could, has really relied on those community partners to deliver the vaccine. So we have used Adventist Health in St. Helena through the St. Helena Hospital Foundation that has helped us administer a tremendous amount of vaccines to the community. We have also had strategic vaccination clinics for senior Latinx community by Kaiser. And we have had Queen of the Valley as well. So I've got some great news to report is Olay Health is now going to be in the mix with vaccinations. And that is going to really help us move the needle on those targeted populations that are most affected by COVID-19. It's important to look at data. And what we know is that the Latinx population over 65 is the most affected. And so the demographic served by Olay Health will take the 65 plus category and target the community. At the same time, in American Canyon, we have some mobile home parks that are senior-only mobile home parks, and we also have the Valley View senior housing community. And those two places are going to have mobile clinics next week, so targeted 65-plus in that category. We are continuously looking at how we're going to get to the 65-plus, and at the same time, address the demographic impacts of COVID-19 in the Latinx population here. And so one of the things that has come down from us in the phase 1B strategy, in the phase 1B category of vaccinations, is how we are going to distribute them has now been told to us by the state. And so, you know, we were told, here's this broad category, right? And it's thousands of people. And there was no method of prioritizing within that. It was left to the counties. You started seeing different impacts in different counties. And so in order to create in the hopes of a more equitable distribution, we know that in the field there's going to be variables that happen based upon availability, transportation, communication, and access. This strategy now allocates 70% of the vaccines to our age-based, which is 65% in the 1B category, and 30% are in the tier 1 of the 1B category. Of that 30%, that 30% is broken up. 10% of that goes to education and childcare beginning on March 1st. And I'll get back to that one in a little bit. And then 20% of that 30%, 20% is food, ag, and emergency services workers. And so that's really how we're going to strategize within those parameters. Our goal is to be able to vaccinate all of our 75 plus category because of whether it's challenges that are posed with identifying people or getting them in. We are also addressing 65 plus at this time, but the goal is 75 plus.
Very good. It's hard to escape the feeling that a lot of people express right now of just sort of a free-for-all, a cafeteria, as it were, a smorgasbord of what end do we start at to get the vaccine? Where do I go? Why is it at Walgreens? Why is it at the Oakland Coliseum? Why am I listening to the county?
It's a mess. In essence, at times.
Dr. Relluccio talked about it on Monday sort of embraced the free-for-all of it, which I felt was kind of liberating to me. Like, okay, I'm not right. It is a free-for-all. And she's now saying, go to Oakland if you want, right? Go to Rite Aid, go to Costco, whatever the opportunity is. Which to me, I mean, you're a communicator as a supervisor. You're a lawyer. You have organized approach to things. Why is it such a free-for-all? Why isn't there more of a structure to it, I guess, is what confuses a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, another one of those points of frustration in this process of understanding it. And I can go ahead and say, I have scheduled 3 different vaccine appointments for my parents to get vaccinated. Through different channels. Why? Because you go and you try until that you get that first one, and then that's where you will get your second shot if you're in a second right now that we only have available to us first and second dose type vaccines. When the vaccines rolled out, you know, we use this a lot. There's two phrases. We say pivot. That's like the word of probably our decade, right? But the second thing that we say a lot is we are building this plane as we're flying it. And the system of distribution was not put in place at the time that that vaccine's rolled out. So there's a lot of catch up. And what is happening when you take and you look at a state as large as California, giving it to the counties and trying to create that system of accountability within these 58 counties, frankly, it was beyond what the state was able to do. And so they brought in the partner of Blue Shield to act as the third party administer. And then you look at one of the largest medical providers in California is Kaiser. Well, how do you not give to Kaiser? And let's go back to this is a vaccine. It's medical service, right, that people are receiving. We want people to be able to receive this in a way that they are used to, much like the flu vaccine, right? So let's take the flu vaccine. You can get it at Rite Aid. You could get it at CVS. You could get it at a public health clinic. You can get it at your medical provider. We are finally reaching that point where it's going to be very normalized, the locations where these vaccines come from. What we don't have is the supply to back up the logistics that have put in place. So when one of them is out of balance, it looks chaotic. But yes, you can go to Oakland. If you get an appointment at the Oakland Arena, please go get your vaccine. If you can log on to Rite Aid or CVS, or Walgreens to get an appointment. Rite Aid does not have available appointments, but they are administering right down the road here from where we're at on Imola.
That's where I saw it happen.
CVS, yeah. Our closest CVS is Sonoma that is administering, and I know some Napa County residents got appointments over there. There is a CVS in Davis that is also administering. That's the closest right now. We have asked CVS to include us in Napa here, given that we have a couple of CVS locations. Hopefully that comes through for us. But those are at the federal designation level. So imagine just, you know, handing over to those entities. Here's some vaccines. Go at it. What comes to the county is coming from the state allocation. So it passes from the feds to the state and then from the state to the counties. As I just said, that wasn't working so great. So now it goes from the state to Blue Shield. Blue Shield's making that determination. 20% off the top is going to go to Kaiser of the state allocation. And from the rest of it, then Blue Shield is going to give it to whether it's those multi-county entities like Adventist Health and Providence, and to the counties specifically. So what the real hope is here in the next coming weeks is there will be more places where you can get it. You are not by any means restricted of receiving the vaccine only in your county. And know that because we do have this one landing place for all the vaccine registration, that we are able to pull that data to know who is getting vaccinated outside of the county yet resides here in the county. And so that data, it's coming together. It's frustrating. I understand it. What's different here from, you know, as I always say, we're very well versed in disaster. And actually one of my colleagues, Diane Dillon, said to me yesterday during our board meeting, she said, "You've never been a supervisor without a disaster." And I said, "Well, that is true. I have not. On my very first day on the job, we had floods. We closed the floodgates. We had mudslides and $40 million of road repair. So yes, I have never been a supervisor without a disaster." But what's different here is the other disasters that we have had have been local, where decisions are made locally and we're able to assess a situation. And then we just reach up to the state and the feds and we say, "This is what we need." And it comes down. This is a different type of a disaster. This isn't national. It's global, right? So we are receiving the direction coming from the feds and the allocations from the feds and the guidance from the CDC. It comes over to the state. It goes through its California iteration because, you know, it's a different language here in California, right? And so it goes through its iteration and then it comes down to the counties. And so it really is a top-down approach, which certainly adds to the frustration of all of this, because we are that trusted partner in disasters, but we're making do with what we have. We are being we are thinking outside of the box and looking for all of those opportunities to be able to really bring that hope, as you said, Taylor, that people are looking for. We're getting there, but you're going to have to bear with us for a couple of weeks.
Couple of other questions. In terms of forward progress, there's reason to be optimistic that we might get out of the purple tier and into the red maybe 3 weeks out, right?
Yeah, we need to hold our numbers for 2 weeks, I believe, what they were saying.
Get the right numbers next Tuesday and stay there for 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. And then we would pop into the red tier.
So the soonest we could pop into the red tier is March 10th.
Right.
And so on March 9th, the determination would get made. Yeah. You know, we are moving in the right direction. One of the things that's incredibly important is we still need to keep our testing up, right? That testing factor is what is helping our adjusted case rate come down. So that is incredibly important, but everything is trending downward. January was, our most devastating month. As far as COVID-19, not just here, certainly, right, statewide, as we saw our regional stay-at-home orders, but we've definitely seen great progress. Sadly, we still have hospitalizations. We still have had deaths this month, and it is our sincere hope that if we can continue with our community mitigation strategies of washing our hands, wearing our masks, keeping our distance, reducing that mingling, and to not let your guard down. If you do get that vaccination, don't let your guard down. You still have to wear your mask. The state still has an order that says wear your mask. And remember that the mask isn't so much about you. It's about the other person, right? It's the greatest form of care, empathy, and respect that we can extend to people in our community to wear a mask.
You used the word mingling, and I just realized, first of all, what an odd word that is and how foreign it seems. And then I realized how much I would enjoy a little mingling right now, if it was possible. I got to ask one other thing completely off of these topics. Unique situation, maybe the only time I can think of, correct me if I'm wrong, the Board of Supervisors now have two retirements and two open seats of incumbents. I don't know when that's happened previously.
So it has not.
Okay, see, my memory's not as bad as I thought.
Good job.
And, you know, I will tell you, because I am a supervisor that has only supervised in disasters, you know, that is going, the experience that Supervisor Dillon and Supervisor Wagon Connect bring to the board is certainly, going to be a tremendous change for the board. You know, I'm really taking these next 2 years as that opportunity to really, you know, dive deeper into the county and to its history and to understand more of what got us to these practices and norms that we have at the county, because that institutional knowledge is, you know, it's not leaving, right? It's just not going to be with us on Tuesdays. I'm certain, you know, we could still call upon them if we have questions. But there's going to be a different change, and that poses, it will pose a challenge, because as when I came in, we had two new board members, Supervisor Gregory and myself. And so here we are going to be again, and those changes will pose the challenges as how we learn to work as a new board together. But it'll also give us the opportunity to draw upon those different experiences that those new colleagues of mine will bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. The question for my mind, though, is that having a race where there's no incumbent is very different, and it opens up the field, and you get a lot more people engaged. I've heard of at least four people that are talking about District 1, maybe four I've heard about in District 3. Five, six in District 3. You're kidding.
I've heard four in District 3, and mm-hmm. I've heard six.
Six, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. No, the other way around. Four in District 1 and six in District 3.
Right, not surprised. The question I have, though, is that kind of a free-for-all, and when a lot of people are scrambling, can affect governance during campaigns. It can change the seeming importance of issues. And there's a great example of that, really, right now, because in the city council race, the whole county islands issue that came up is now carried through and become something that they're trying to keep on the plate for the current council. It was never an issue before, right? And a candidate in that race made it become an issue. Now, everybody has to speak to it, whether they're incumbent or running for office. Don't you think there's a potential for kind of a disruptive period here?
You know, it's interesting you say that, Barry. Yes, campaigns have an influence on governance. I'm not at all going to say that they don't. And, you know, it also has an impact as whoever you comes in, their campaign stump speech, gets into the strategy in some way or another, right? That's why they were elected. I don't see that as a negative. I don't see that as a negative, because what ends up happening, campaigns become this micro-focused view of the concerns that the community has. That is our role in governance. Our role in governance is to provide stability in the community, to listen to what the concerns are and to act upon those concerns. So doesn't mean it won't get heated. Doesn't mean it won't get uncomfortable. But, you know, we didn't take these jobs to sit comfortably. That's not why we take these jobs, because I can guarantee you there is no comfort in it. It's a constant reflective position that you are in as to what is needed in the community. So yes, it's going to have an impact. But just like candidates themselves have an impact on the governance, so do initiatives. Initiatives have an impact on governance. There's a lot of rumblings about initiatives out there right now. And so, we're getting into, there are those periods of the don't do anything periods, because it's too close to elections and you tip things and you need to strategically see where things move. But this is going to be a very long intake period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, way to put it. All right. County Supervisor Billy Ramos, our guest in this segment of Wine Country Live. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you
so much for having me. It's great to be able to share this information and to answer the questions. And I really hope we get to a point where, you know, one day we can celebrate with saying, if we got to that 75% community immunity, that maybe we have a virtual mingle.
Oh, just a virtual one? I want a real mingle.
One day.
Thanks again.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.